Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. On this fourth Sunday in the Easter season, we continue to ponder the nature of our Easter faith and the meaning of the resurrection as found in the early church. This morning's passage chronicles the story of the early church, unfolding amidst the days after Jesus' resurrection. This passage immediately follows Peter's sermon and chronicles the response of the early followers. The reading begins. So those who welcomed his message were baptized, and that day after 3,000 persons were added. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. Awe came upon everyone, because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as they had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
I'd like to start off with a little bit of congregational participation, so I need your help. How many of you remember playing I Spy? A few hands, I thought so. Great game. I spy with my little eye something that is white. Any takers out there? How good are people there? Oh, all of a sudden everyone's, no, I don't know how to play. What we got? Any? Very close. Communion table cloth. Very close. Okay. We got any others? Any other guesses here? What's that? The nap? Oh, wow. Did I look at the napkins? Is that how you knew? I just guessed. Kid, when you play with kids, they always look at what they're thinking, and you always know what it is. Oh, you're a pretty good group. You're fast. You're good. I'm going to move it up a notch here. I spy with my little eye Jesus. Can anyone here spot Jesus? I wanted to start off this way, because we could go on. This could be the sermon, right? We could have some good dialogue. I wanted to start off this way, thinking about spotting Jesus, because I think this is exactly what was happening in the Acts passage. In the text that Gwen just read for us, I think this is exactly what was happening. They were trying to identify how it is that you can spot Jesus in a community. Just a little bit of background. Now, the Gospel of Luke, most commentators believe that the Gospel of Luke, the writer for that, was also the same one that wrote the book of Acts. And the book of Acts are the acts of the early apostles. So it's kind of a bit of a compendium of the spiritual movement, kind of some of the early history of the followers of the way, the earliest history of the Jesus movement, what later became institutionalized as the church. And in many ways, what we're looking at is what makes this movement unique from other movements that were also opposed to Rome. There were other movements opposed to Rome at the time. We were not the only one, of course. And the text inquires about what makes a Jesus follower unique from all the other followers. What would make Jesus' community unique from the other communities that would gather around a common purpose, a common ideal, a common way of being? Now, a bit of background. The text that we read here, something really interesting happens right before. Right before is Peter's inaugural Pentecost sermon. If you read through it, it's one of the most famous sermons that is preached by one of Jesus' disciples. And as a result of that Pentecost sermon, we read at the very first verse of our lection, 3,000 people convert, they're baptized. It's a powerful, powerful experience for the people. And what proceeds in this text as we read through this passage, what we experience are what I would suggest are four different ways that you can spot a Jesus follower. Four different ways that you can spot a Jesus community in our midst. Let's unpack what the passage has for us and see where we are, where we can spot Jesus in our community, where we can spot Jesus in our lives, where we can spot Jesus in our church. The first thing that we read about, first thing that we hear is that a Jesus community is absorbed in Jesus' teachings. It says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and fellowship. If you were to read through the book of Acts, you would see time after time after time of the disciples taking seriously Jesus. They take Jesus' teachings profoundly seriously. They shape their lives after what he did and how he taught and how he called them to live and be. They want to learn the way of Jesus. They want to grow into the way of Jesus. They want to allow Jesus to be found in what they are and what they do. I love the references often to religion as being a practice. Because religion is something, spirituality is something that we practice. We don't necessarily ever arrive at. It's something that we grow into, that we lean towards. It's something that we are always trying to work towards in our faith journey. Can you spot Jesus at Northwood United Church? Can you spot Jesus in your own life as you think about the ways in which we are absorbed in Jesus' teachings? And you spot Jesus. Well, the second area that we see in this text, I would suggest, is found around the concept of fellowship. Fellowship in religious settings, but also in the greater social settings as well. The text says, they devoted themselves to the breaking of bread. The early Christian community surrounded themselves constantly for the holy, sacred meal. They surrounded themselves, one another, with food, celebration. They were constantly together, enjoying one another's company, enjoying one another's journey, helping one another. I was back at a stewardship conference several years back, and what I found so wonderful is we walked in and all of the different lecturers, they presented in chef's costumes. They had aprons and puffy white chef hats on. And they wanted to remind us that we were listening and learning. They wanted to remind us that one of Jesus' favorite things to do was to gather people, saints and sinners and all between, to gather us together around the table. That was what Jesus always did, more than any other action in the scriptures. Indeed, it's amazing. Isn't it interesting that this is something we love to do intuitively as well, isn't it? What is one of the sacraments of our church is a potluck, right? I mean, it's kind of the third unknown sacrament that we have is the church potluck. And who doesn't love a good church potluck? Certainly, it's after baptism and communion, it almost seems like a sacrament. Because I think something profound and powerful happens. Even if you forgot it's a potluck lunch after church, there's always enough. We gather together in community, and the miracle of that gathering is the diversity of our food, the diversity of our community, and we unite in love, we unite, we share, and we grow together. But something even more powerful is at play when we were to read this in the Greek. The word used for community here is actually koinonia. It's a word you may have heard about before. It's about the depth of sharing that happens in Jesus' communities. And you might not be surprised that one of the things that prompts these kind of communities is the prompting of their financial sharing, the sharing of all of their goods, not just their love, but the sharing of all of their resources so that they might help the last and the least and that all might be upheld and supported and loved and cared for as they had need. Prophet Isaiah prophesied about this kind of community that would one day occur after their release from Babylon. Isaiah said, come, and one day you'll be able to buy wine and milk without price. He talked about the promised land and what it would look like for all of them. Some of you know that before I came here to Northwood, I was serving in the downtown east side at First United Church for just a little while. And one of the things that I found fascinating there was so many of the volunteers there, so many of those volunteers had themselves overcome great challenges in their own lives. Some of the volunteers there had overcome challenges over addiction or homelessness or poverty. And after they had overcome their own personal challenges, they had returned First United to serve those who were currently struggling in their own lives. Koinonia, unities of love and upholding one another and support. That was the kind of vision of the early church. Can you spot Jesus at Northwood United Church? Can you spot Jesus in your own life as you think about table fellowship, sharing of resources and koinonia? And you spot Jesus. The third reference is to a community that is deeply engaged in prayer. It says they devoted themselves to the prayers. To read through the book of Acts is to be reminded and to be amazed at the diversity of different styles of prayers, a multiplicity of prayers that they offered throughout their various challenges in life. They had prayers of thanksgiving for God's grace in their lives. They had prayers for deliverance when they were facing those challenging times in their lives. They had prayers for petitions, asking for God to bless them. They had so many different prayers. Prayer is something that needs increasingly to be claimed in the church as a place for us to engage with society. I was fascinated during the season of Lent. I put on a mindfulness meditation gathering on Tuesday nights. We had 22 different people want to come and learn how to meditate together. It's a deeply spiritual time. I'm amazed at the spiritual hunger in our world today. But is it a surprise how noisy we are in our world, how busy we are in our world? The world is looking for places of solitude and solace, places of comfort where we can truly experience the divine, the holy in our midst. Now, certainly there is not just one way in which we can pray, indeed. But indeed, we are called as a faith community to offer those ways of helping people engage, being a place where people can engage with the holy in our midst. One of my favorite quotes of prayer comes from Soren Kierkegaard. He says, "Prayer does not change God. It changes the one who prays." Do you love that? Because prayer has cure power. When we pray, it changes us. It shapes us. It allows us to be open for God to work through us and in us. Allows the world to change through God's grace and power. The fourth area that we see in the text it speaks about is a community that lives in awe, and a lot of Elisha's prayer reference to living in awe of God. It says they devoted themselves to having a proper sense of awe before God. I think to be deeply faithful as a follower of Jesus' way is to live with a sense of awe, to be aware, to be opening ourselves to God's beauty, God's presence, God's power unfolding in the world before us. It's to wake up and hear a bird singing and to be amazed at God's voice. It's to see out our windows and to see a sunrise and to be amazed in awe of all the little things that unfold before us and to not be so busy that we fail to see it. You're called to live in awe over God's creation, God's beauty, God's majesty. It is quite a humble stance for us to take, isn't it? It's a very humbling stance because that's generally not the way that we live in the world, but that is the way that the early Christian community indeed was living their lives. It's interesting, I think, in this world, I'm seeing in the last decade or maybe two decades, a lot of literature coming out with kind of a convergence, a coming together of science and religion. It seemed like before there was a lot of kind of arguments prior to that, but in the last decade or so, boy, there's a lot of interesting literature coming out. I just wonder if it's kind of all coming from some of my favorite aphorism of Einstein. He says, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. And I think it's interesting how we're seeing these two disciplines coming together and finding ways to mutually inform one another in awe, in wonder, and in beauty. To read through the book of Acts, we see a constant array, the ways in which God works through these people that live in awe, the way in which they're open to God's power and the way in which God's power works in them. Indeed, the church alive is evidence of God alive in the world. We come to the end of the text. The end is very promising and exciting. It says, day by day, the Lord added to their number. Probably heard lots of jokes from ministers saying that must have been quite the sermon Peter preached. 3,000 people were added after the sermon. What am I doing wrong? But as we hear this passage, we know now that it's not about the sermon. The secret to that faith community was what happened in those four movements of the faith community. The secret to the health and vitality and growth of that faith community was all about them focusing upon the religious teachings, being absorbed in the apostles' teachings. It was all about the community, the koinonia, the ways in which they shared fellowship. It was all about the ways that they prayed together. They were actively engaged in prayer. And it was all about the ways that they constantly lived in awe over God's beauty and God's grace and God's wonder. And when they focused on those four areas in their life, in their spirituality, as a community, amazing things happened to them. Individually, they grew deeply as spiritual people, as followers of the way of Jesus, and communally, they grew as well. They grew in greatness and in number. Can you spy Jesus? Church has been doing this for 2,000 years, haven't we? In the earliest day, the way that they spied Jesus were those risky people that were countercultural, living in opposition to Rome. They were the ones thrown to the lions for following the way of Jesus, for opposing the empire. When Rome institutionalized the early church in the 4th century, we think of ways in which they called the early church. What it was it was the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. That was what the creed named it as. 11 centuries later, Protestant reformers said they spied the church wherever there was biblical teaching and preaching and whenever the sacraments were administered according to Jesus' teaching. And today, we're 2 millennia into this movement following Jesus, spying Jesus in our communities. Today, I think more than ever, we're coming back to our original roots. Coming back to our original roots of following Jesus with depth and integrity. Community, faith growth, the ways in which we live in awe and in wonder. Indeed, I think whenever we're around someone that's alive in their faith, aren't we just so attracted to them and want to be around them? And whenever I go to a church community that is alive in the Spirit, don't you want to go back? That is what is happening, I think, where people are spying Jesus in the world today. So can you spot Jesus here at Northwood United Church? Where do you spy him? How is he alive here at our church? Is there perhaps room for him to be allowed to give space to breathe and move and live and grow? How do we make this not just Northwood United Church, but Jesus Church that is alive at Northwood United Church in our little corner of the world? how about your own life? Can you spot Jesus in your own life? Where do you see Jesus in your life? How is he alive, breathing in your living? Is there room for him to live, grow, and breathe even deeper and fuller? They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, breaking of bread and the prayers. Awe came upon everyone, and day by day the Lord added to their numbers those who were being saved. May it be so. Amen.